how much you are beloved. I hope as you looked at the mountains today that you thought about how he's created things for you just to give you pleasure. Right? And I hope as you ate dinner that you thought about the way he has cared for your needs and provided for you. And I hope as you hung out with friends or maybe made new ones that you realize how he's placed women in your life to help you along the road and make it better. And I want you to notice these active words that I'm using. He's creates. He cares for you. He's provided. He placed people, right? God's love is active. His mercy is active. It is happening right now. Not only, as we remember this morning, did he wait for you, not only did he forgive your debts, but he acts daily in mercy to you. There are thousands of moments all day long when you receive something from the hand of God, and you deserved none of it. And this is what we're going to talk about tonight. We did patience and forgiveness, and now we're at acts of love. Acts of love toward those who sin against you. This third part of mercy. It feels a little bit short. Here we go. Okay. So I want you to think of two people who are in conflict, right? And this one's turned away. She's not going anywhere, though. She's staying, okay? That's our patience part. And then you see her turn around. And whatever was done between the two of them, she's thrown it as far as the east is from the west. And that way, she can turn and look at her friend in the eye. Right, and that's the forgiveness. And then you see her take a step forward and her hand's out. Maybe she's got a gift in it. Okay? And that, this active, returning, seeking out, moving toward kind of love, that's what we're talking about tonight. This is a piece of mercy that for some of you may be the hardest. Because, you know, quite frankly, patience I can fake. Right? I can bite my tongue and you don't have a clue. Right? And forgiveness, you might not know if I don't really forgive you. Right? But acts of love and mercy, these are out there. People can see them or not. People will know if you're doing them or not. There's more pressure here. People are going to know if you excel at the active mercy. Now, the commands are clear. Right? Acting in love toward the enemy, this is what we're supposed to do. 1 Thessalonians 5:15, make sure that nobody pays back wrong for wrong, but always try to be kind to each other. Romans 12 says, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. And it also says, if your enemy is hungry, do what? Feed him. And if your enemy is thirsty, give him something to drink, right? Matthew 5:44, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. So we're talking about intentional, well-designed acts of love here, acts of the will. Okay, it's Joseph giving food to his hungry, backstabbing brothers. It's the Good Samaritan cleaning an enemy's wound, paying money to find him a safe place to stay. It's Jesus washing the dirty feet of disciples who were just arguing about who was greatest and ignoring the fact that he just told them he's about to die. And there's some lucky professionals that get to practice this acts of mercy thing more than others. Nurses hand out smiles and kind words and cold water and gentle touch to bitter, frustrated, angry, sick people. When I was a teacher, mercy was an 8-hour job, and it was filled with unruly, selfish teenagers and ungrateful parents. Mamas, your acts of love start first thing in the morning when that grumpy child still gets breakfast. And you're still going strong at night when that grumpy child still gets a kiss at bedtime. Right, but even those who have quieter jobs and easy people around us, we are all given opportunities to extend mercy actively, even if it's just to encourage somebody else at this hard work. But before we get too far into the acts of mercy, all right, before we get too far into these acts of mercy that you can do, and I do have a long list of really practical, active acts of mercy that you can do. Let's stop for a minute more and look at God's active mercy. Because, you know, in a group this size, I'm betting that some of you are thinking, I don't feel like he's been very merciful to me. Right? Life hurts. And I know it hurts for a lot of you. And it hurts all the time. Fathers leave. Kids rebel. Parents die. Friends are lost. Jobs are lost. Babies never come. Dreams pass and they're unfulfilled. And you feel like you can't catch a break. Where is my mercy? Right. And maybe the mountains today, they weren't enough to lighten your load. And maybe dinner was just Mexican. And, and maybe the friends felt distant. And you know what? Nothing makes you feel better. And really, I get it. I've been there. And sometimes it really feels that way. But there was one act of mercy from our Lord that can overshadow all of that. All the aching that you feel today. There was one act of mercy, and it was so big, it's the one act that any of us really need. And you know what it is, right? It's the cross. It's the ultimate act of love toward enemies. And really, I don't need to give you a list of things to do because you just look at that and there's your example. God was intertwined, right, with his Son for all of eternity. And God the Father, who wanted to show mercy to the lost and the dead, let go of his own Son. They untangled, and God sent Jesus here to wear our skin and walk this earth and die on a cross. And Jesus, offering mercy to the ones who reviled him, he took all that nasty sin upon himself and became the sacrifice that God the Father required for reconciliation to happen. And even while his body was breathing its last, Jesus, the one who holds all things together, he kept breath flowing to his persecutors. And even while all his blood spilled out, Jesus made sure not a drop was spilled from any of his friends. And even while he took every jeer and punch and lash, Jesus made sure his friends and his mother were safe. Until the very last minute, he was looking for any chance to extend mercy, some act of love to give, even words of hope to that taunting thief that was there beside him. So that when you die, you can have an eternity of mercy. There will be feasts and mansions, and joy and peace and health, and God at your side. So you're not feeling mercy today, and I get it. But you look to your future because there's mercy abundant there. This is where we have to come when all the hurts rush over us and we can't see the present blessings. When Satan is telling you that there is no good thing for you here. Well, you remember the cross and this indescribable sacrifice. We have to remember the rescue and the mercy that awaits us in heaven. If he can extend such mercy when there was no mercy for him, if he can act on my behalf while his own life is torn away, surely I can act out of love when my own heart is breaking a little. Maybe. I mean, he is God. He invented mercy, right? He embodies mercy. Me, I'm just a human, a hurting human at that. How can I possibly do this? This patience thing, this forgiveness thing, and now I have to act out my love? I don't even have love for these people. Right? Before you feel overwhelmed with guilt, I want you to hear the words of John MacArthur. A Christian is not someone who keeps the Sermon on the Mount. A Christian is somebody who knows he can't. And he comes to Jesus Christ for forgiveness for that sin of falling short. Jesus Christ forgives your sin of lovelessness. And before you feel overwhelmed by the daunting task of showing mercy ahead of you, please remember, we aren't doing these things to win God's approval. And when we get to heaven, we won't stand before God and give him a rundown of the little acts of mercy that we managed to eke out and wait to see if we maybe get in. Right? The only act of mercy getting us into heaven is the one that he did on the cross, and it's done. You belong to him already. There is nothing you have to do to make the Lord more pleased with you. Isn't that good? So if you fail sometimes at this mercy thing, it's not the end of the story. Right? You don't have to do it perfectly. These acts of love are just responses of gratefulness to his mercy. We attempt to walk like him because we just want to try to look something like him. We do this because we trust him when he said that this is the best way. You are trying to live out mercy because the love he has can't be stopped, and it has to flow out of you toward others, anyone, even your difficult ones. Please, I don't want you to look at my talks today as a frustrating list of to-dos. Okay, it's not I have to show patience and I have to forgive and I have to act in love now. It's I get to act in patience. Do you hear the difference? I get to give that gift of forgiveness. This is a privilege. I get to act in love. Ladies, you were born to praise and glorify him. You were born to be his hands and feet and to bear much fruit for the maker of the universe. Like that he would use us? It's amazing. Right? Ephesians tells us that he has prepared in advance all the good works that you get to do. He's hand-picked you to show love to someone. Do you think he won't enable you? You can't do it on your own. No. God's commands are not usually something we can do in our own strength. But guess what? You're not alone. You have the Holy Spirit. And greater is the one living inside of you than he who is in the world. His incomparably great power is for us who believe. Ephesians 1 says that the power is like the working of his mighty strength, which he exerted in Christ when he raised him from the dead. That should give you some hope. We might be able to do this. As soon as you go to the one who gives out the strength, there is so much strength available to you. And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. You will. You know what I think every morning when I wake up? No. No, right? I can't do this day. I cannot get up and get my body moving. I cannot meet four hungry, insistent, loud little bodies with a cheerful face. I cannot greet my husband with a holy kiss. I am an introvert, and I need to start my day in quiet and peace. A cup of tea and no people. But I know from experience that I'm not going to get it. I was there when they were born. It's my own fault. I don't want to have to get up and love people. I can't do this. And it is these thoughts that get me up out of bed and over to the corner of my couch and to my Bible. Every morning before they wake up, because I can't do it. And I so want to do it. I so want to be a wife who in the morning can pack a lunch with a love note in it for my husband, even though last night there was tension and silence. And I so want to be a mother who can fill my children's day with jokes and hugs, even when they refuse my rules and complain about their math work. And I want to be a friend who has cookies for the neighbor who let her dog pee all over my flowers. I so want to be beautiful like that. Don't you want to be beautiful like that? But there is no act of mercy coming out of this body, not unless I have tapped into the merciful one. John 15, you know this one too, right? I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, he will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Just this Thursday morning, my littlest, I was getting her dressed, and she said, Mommy, when we do Bible time this morning, can we please pray for me not to be jealous of Katie's toys? Because I don't know how to do it without God. Exactly. Right? Like, that's exactly what I'm saying. Ladies, you can't have the power if you don't tap in. I counsel women all the time who won't get this. They don't get how desperately we need time with God. All those other needs, they crowd in. I need to make dinner. I need to get this errand done. Work's too much. I need to answer this email. I need to sleep 15 more minutes. I just need to watch my show and relax. Right? And then they don't know why they feel so anxious and why they can't stop yelling at the kids and why they ate the whole pan of brownies and why mercy feels so impossible. You make time with him and you will hear beautiful things. You will hear the promise of 2 Corinthians, how you are a new creation. You will hear Romans 6 telling you how you have died to that sin. You are not a slave to the old ways of revenge or hatred anymore. That old self was crucified, and your new self can choose mercy. John Piper points out that before passages like Colossians 3, 12 through 19, you can go there later. It's this long list of like what you got to do. And it can be pretty daunting, but Paul is good to us because before Paul gives us these kinds of lists, he usually spends time telling us who we are, right? And things like you are raised with Christ, you are hidden with Christ, destined for glory, free from the enslavement of sin, you are a new person, you are equal to any believer. This is my favorite, you are chosen. You are holy and you are loved. And Piper says this understanding of who we are, this is why Paul gives it to us, this new view of ourselves. This is the fuel for being patient and forgiving and loving well. But you can't know this new self if you're not listening to God tell you about her. You know that verse in Zephaniah that says he's singing over you? Don't you want to hear what he sings? So you meet with him, okay? And you hear, you listen, and you start believing, God's going to help me. God's going to make it happen. But what is he going to make happen? What do I specifically do? I don't love them yet. And I sure don't know what love acted out toward them is supposed to look like. So I have ideas. Okay? Nehemiah 9. You don't have to go there, but write it down because it's really good. It has this wonderful list of mercies, all the acts of mercies that God poured out on his rebellious Israelites while they're out in the desert. And they were refusing him and disobeying him and worshiping the golden calf. And you know what God was doing that whole time? He was sticking with them. He's guiding them with a pillar of fire. He's talking to them with his spirit. He's feeding them manna. He's keeping them clothed and no holes in their clothes either. He's giving them fresh water. He's making their enemies fall. He's giving them children. He's providing houses full of all kinds of good things. He gave them wells that were already dug, vineyards that were already producing. So you need a list of ideas of acts of mercy that you can do. So you go to Nehemiah 9, you put it in today's language. Okay, so he gave them manna. Maybe you make a birthday cake. Okay? He gave them wells that were already dug. You offer a glass of lemonade. He gave them clothes, right? So buy them a funny t-shirt. He was guiding them, so give your advice. Help them make a decision. Stand up for them when they encounter opposition. Sit on the porch with them and just be together. Plant flowers in their yard. Take care of their children while they go to an appointment. Send your children over with a hand-drawn picture. ask God what you should do. I am willing to bet if you are really open to hearing from him, that ideas will begin to form in your head. Now listen, you're going to doubt that that idea was from him. I should take them a donut. I don't know if they like donuts. I should write them a note. They don't care about a note from me. Ladies, you second guess and you'll never do it. Just assume that a prompting to do something good is from the Holy Spirit. Go for it. No matter how small it seems, even the smallest mercy is obnoxious to the demons. Don't underestimate those small moments. The ice cream cone handed to a teenager whose mouth is speaking disrespect, the friendly word to a grumpy clerk on the phone, the birthday card sent to a friend who never contacts you anymore. They are practice for the big time. It's got to be like playing in a piano. My kids are, they're always surprised when I can sit down and I can still sort of play. I'm no Susie Brummett, but I can sort of play, you know, a little bit of things that I played when I was 11. And I can kind of pick out new songs. And my, how did you do that? Well, I practiced until I was 16 and my mom allowed me to quit. Right? It's got to be like that, that you practice and you practice and you practice just the little songs. Right? Until one day, the big one hits and you've already practiced. Right? Because unfortunately, one day there might be a big one. And you're going to have want to practice. Okay, I'm going to cry again. So what would that be, number four or something? For those of you that are keeping count. 4 weeks ago, my little sister, whose heart has always been one of unconditional grace, and whose life has been one of seeking to make life easier for those around her. Her husband announced that he was done with their 18-year marriage out of the blue. No clue it was coming. Two kids. He'll be moving out at the end of this month. I don't think she'd ever had an enemy before. And really, in her merciful way, I am sure she doesn't think of him now as the enemy. But the point is this, that none of us ever dreamed she would have to go to the extremes of mercy that God is asking her to practice now. Right? She has always been the solid one. She married a banker. You know, it wasn't supposed to happen. Right? But she has been a practicer. And she knew that mercy was every day in the little moments. She did things like making her husband breakfast in bed. She rocked and kissed her children through their many temper tantrums. She kept up with distant friends and ran carpool with noisy kids and sought to serve in whatever way she could, so that now, when she's called to forbear with the unbearable and forgive the unforgivable and act in love towards someone who is refusing all acts of love, she can do it. You know, she could have changed the locks on the door. She could throw dishes and slash his tires. She could meet him with icy silence and tear him up to all her friends. Instead, she offers him calm. She tells him she will always be willing for him to come home. The other day, she told me she offered to let him sleep in the bed and she could take the couch because he looked so exhausted. She has already built the reflex of mercy. And here I have to smile because every day I talk to her on the phone, and here's what I hear from her. Jet, there was this incredible verse on my email. Jet, Lisa Turkhurst had the perfect blog today. Jet, Amy just brought over a cooler full of meals. Jet, he's playing my favorite song on the radio. Jet, the sweet lady at school prayed over me today. And on and on and on, and you know what he's doing, right? He's enabling her. He's giving her everything she needs for life and godliness. Because that's what God does. And this is my point this evening. He will enable you. It might be hard, but every moment he will enable you. He has mercy for the merciful. And I, because I was working on these talks, Thank you, Mindy. Thank you, God. I, for once, could come beside her and cheer her on to love and good deeds, because I'm convinced that mercy is the best chance we have to win him back to his wife and to win him to God. And because I believe that somehow he is going to enable her and she will come out the winner of this battle to look like Christ and walk in his path. And it is a battle. You are going to come up against enemies more formidable than you think. Pain. You're going to feel taken advantage of and misunderstood and generally unloved. Your teenager will not appreciate that you did his laundry. Your boss will not appreciate that you covered his butt with the angry customer. And the disappointment will tempt you to decide it wasn't worth the effort. But 1 Corinthians 15:58, let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. Galatians 6:9-10. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we do not give up. Be assured, nothing is wasted in God's economy. We will reap a harvest. There may be days when you look at your attempts of mercy and you don't remember why you're doing them. Jet told me to, or something. You think these attempts can't be worth much because they're only done out of loving obedience to a God who seems really distant. You are in good company. This is what Jesus did. He looked around and he could not find his father nor his friends, but intending to complete his father's will, even if forsaken, he obeyed. Let us fix our eyes on this Jesus. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Consider the note that you write to your difficult mother-in-law, a note written to Christ. Consider the flowers you bring to your roommate, flowers offered to Christ. He will not turn down your gift. You know, another thing we're going to fight is our pride, because you're doing good, you know, and they aren't. And there's going to be a real temptation to think that your mercy makes you better than them. And being such awesome people ourselves, we expect to have perfect people in our lives. It's so easy to lose sight of the fact that we are the reason Jesus died on that cross. We need to deal with the anger that we feel at their imperfections. You know, many of you know about my son, Ian. Liz mentioned him earlier today. I know I speak about him a lot. But he's really awesome. I hope you don't mind if I talk about him just a little bit more. In fact, I'm going to go down a rabbit trail for a minute, because God was talking to me today about this. My husband, Jeremy, he just made it to 42, and he's he's needed to get glasses for at least the last 2 years. And those of us that wear glasses, you know, we're like, come on, dude, just join the, But he wouldn't, and you know, he couldn't read, and he'd be like, the writing's too small, and the lights, we need more light in here, and I would say, you need to get glasses, you know. Go to the eye doctor, he'll tell you, you need to get glasses. Oh, they won't be comfortable, and they won't look good, and he finally got some. And I don't know what finally convinced him, I guess. Yeah, just decided. So on date night, we went to Target. We saw Matt and Jessica. That's another rabbit trail. Anyway, he got some glasses, and he put them on, and he started to read, and he was like, wow, I can see practically all the time. And he wears them constantly now. Even though they're just reading glasses, he's like, oh, these glasses, I can see. And he's telling others how he can see now, and, you know, sometimes I think about how different the world looks to me since Ian came along. And it's like I couldn't see for a while. And then, you know, God had these things he wanted to tell me about the world and about himself. And I couldn't read the message. So he gave me these Ian glasses. And looking through the lenses of the special needs mama, you know, things take on a new light, and God is clearer, and truth is crisper, and life is more focused. And where I'm going with this is that this is God's mercy, right? His active mercy. It doesn't feel like mercy sometimes, but it is. And anyway, I've talked to some mamas today and others of you I know who are going on really hard roads. And I know that you don't really want to wear the glasses that God is giving you to put on. He's holding them out and you know, you don't really want them. But I encourage you to put on the glasses, because God knows the prescription that you need. He has these lenses that fit you perfectly. And he has things that he wants to tell you. But he needs you to put on the glasses so that you can see what the message is. And they might feel uncomfortable for a little bit. And you might not like the way that you look in them for a little bit. But God knows what you need. And he has an active mercy for you. Anyway, Ian, he's autistic, and his days are full of challenge. Social skills are hard, and motor skills are hard, and he gets anxious to the point of tears and shaking. And my days are all about extended mercy to him. And it's really not very hard, because he is really pretty great and really cute. He's learned to hug and to give me a real kiss, and that's pretty awesome. And, you know, this is the way that God made him. And once I accepted that and put on the glasses, living out patience for his repetitiveness and living out love for his moments of unreasonableness, they really kind of fell into place for the most part. And that's acceptance. My other three children, though, they don't get the same mommy. You told what to your sister? Stop crying over your grammar book. If you whistle that song one more time. Mercy in my house seems to be for the weak. Right? You 5-year-old, stop puking in the back there. Get self-control. Right? I suffer from selective mercy. Anybody else? Yeah. You got mercy for your kids, but not for your husband. Right? He should know better. Got mercy for your lost neighbors, but not for the church members who ought to know better. Right. Selective mercy. Do I think there's some limit to the mercy I should give out every day? Sorry, I've only got enough for Ian. Surely I have all the mercy I need, given to me by an abundant God. Do I think mercy won't work for some of them? Mercy is God's prescription for enacting change. My refusal to show them mercy is because I'm demanding different children, ones that aren't broken. Mercy flows much more easily when I accept their brokenness. So one of my children has been blessed with tear ducts that flow over everything. This is no less deserving of mercy than when Ian goes into a panic. So one of my children interrupts every conversation, and she has no sense of personal space whatsoever. This is no less a time for mercy than when Ian invades my world with a toy and he's shaking it at my face. Everyone is broken, including me. Clearly, including me. Sometimes we're tempted to explain our acts of mercy this way. Well, I didn't want to stoop to his level. Well, you know, I had to be better than her. Now, be careful here. This is not about rising above them in some competition for who's the biggest person. All those acts of love, if our pride takes over, they are no longer acts of love. If we give all we have and surrender our bodies to the flames but have not love, we gain nothing. Micah says that the Lord delights to show mercy. And that's our goal, to delight in mercy. And don't wait. Do it now. God didn't wait to pour out mercy on us. but because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ, even when we were dead in transgressions. That's Ephesians 2:4. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Romans 5:8. So we were dead. We were gone. And he still poured out the mercy. Mercy is for now, while they are still sinners, while they are dead. I can't stress the importance of follow-through enough. If you have a person in your head right now, I give you permission to stop listening to me and start writing down what you need to do. I advise women all the time to make peace with someone. Have the conversation. Offer forgiveness. Be truthful. Send the note. Give the present. Extend the hand. And they're all ready to do it, and they look so determined. And then 2 weeks later, they haven't. And 4 weeks later, they haven't. And then they've forgotten why they were going to, and, well, that person isn't really bothering me anymore. But you know that pain and that anger, it's still in there, right? It's still festering, and it will come back years later. And then they're wondering, why are they still mad? And why does seeing this person still bring up anger and hurt? Why has nothing in this situation changed? This mercy thing, this is where there is hope for change. Don't talk yourself into waiting. Go home tomorrow and seek someone to love. God's mercies are new every morning. Tomorrow morning and Monday morning and Tuesday morning and every morning, let us find new mercies to extend to the undeserving, to the glory of the one who will make it possible.